I am mining investor and editor of Resource Stock Digest, Gerardo Del Real, here with my partner, friend, and colleague, Mr. Nick Hodge, who's also an investor and the publisher of Daily Profit Cycle. I made it back from Vancouver. They let me back in the country. This is the 351st episode of our weekly therapy session that we call Investing in Bizarro World. We're going to talk markets. We're going to talk uranium. We told you. Gold, silver, hour-long consolidations, what we're investing in. And of course, we're going to talk about some of the things that you can count on an almost weekly basis now, unfortunately. We can count on higher gold, we can count on higher silver, and we can count on ICE unnecessarily murdering U.S. citizens. But we'll get to all of that here in just a second. First and foremost, Mr. Hodge, we're back. They let me back in. It was quite an adventure to get there. I'm talking, of course, Vancouver and the Vancouver Resource Investment Conference. You were there for an extra day or two. How are you, sir? It's been busy.
He was a scumbag domestic terrorist, Gerardo. He was out to kill. He was out for blood, Gerardo. I'm tired, Gerardo. It was a long couple of days in Vancouver. As you say, I went up a couple of days early, went to the Metals Investor Forum, where it was shoulder to shoulder in the speaker hall and also in the lunch line. Very good couple of days, long days, meetings on the way to meetings is how I was describing it. You know, yep. Stopping in the hall to talk to people as you were heading on to your next meeting or wrap session. But overall, very good and productive couple of days. The most packed I've seen VREC in the 12 yep. years that I've been speaking there. Take that, take away from that what you will. Some people are saying it's a sign of toppiness or frothiness. And in fact, some of the biggest speakers there were saying that, including Mr. Ross Beatty and Rick Rule, who's been saying that he's been selling since October. So a little bit of mixed messaging there, but lots to like, lots of deals on the table, lots of diligence being done on the companies that you spoke to and that I spoke to. I should say that it was a pleasure to meet some, if not many of you there, whether it was at the talks we gave or on the exhibit hall floor. Shout out to George from Australia, Fabian. You guys were great. All kinds of people stopping us as we went around telling us how much money they've made over the past year, which is always lovely to hear. And thanks to all the new subscribers, I would have to say there's probably 100 new folks able to watch this live podcast, Bizarro World, Investing in Bizarro World Live or Premium, as we head into that price raise in February, even though we're raising it $50. So thank you all for taking advantage of that. We'll try to get you your money's worth.
My high school teachers would be appalled that people pay to hear me and you talk.
My wife might be appalled at that.
Listen, it was a lively few days in Vancouver. We'll get to the societal portion of our takes and opinions and you know, whatever those are worth to you all. But I definitely want to start with the sentiment. This is the first conference that I've been to where people were competing to give us money, right? We literally had people walking up to us. And I don't say this to brag. I'm saying this to explain to y'all and give y'all some context and color as to how bullish this market is. And it's a greed and fear market. We're in the greed portion of it. But we had companies coming up to us asking if we would take their $250,000, asking if we could help with some marketing, and then asking if they should do more. And you know, it's definitely, I think a market, I'm going to have to disagree respectfully with those that say that it's a sign of a top or toppiness. I can agree with toppiness, but look, everything that we said last week continues to be true. The consolidations are getting shorter. The dollar touched a 4-year low. Donald Trump is on TV begging for interest rate cuts, says he will announce his new Fed chair next week. We will know who gets the royal knee pads next week. And by what I mean by that is, you better believe whoever he chooses will be at the behest of your majesty, right? Cutting rates and making things as dovish as humanly possible. That's one aspect of this metals price rage. The other aspect of it, it's not retail driven yet. We've spoken with, you know, mentors and friends of ours that are the most connected people in the world when it comes to coins and collectibles and things of that nature, the Van Simmons of the world. And on the retail side, they're not seeing that rush here in the U.S. and here in North America. The outlier is China. So yes, silver is trading currently at $117. And it's down on the day, right? In China, the spot, the retail physical price is 146, and that is an indicator to me of what people are willing to pay to get the actual metal in their portfolio. And so I think there's upside in silver. I think there's upside in gold. We'll talk equities here in a little bit. I will say this, it is absolutely time, again, like I said it last week, to be cautious, look for value. And to that end, Nick, like, look, folks, we busted our asses while we were out there talking of deals and vetting deals and meeting with companies and doing due diligence. And we got some good ones on the way for subscribers of PPI. So for those of you that are subscribers of Private Placement Intel, we have at least three that have market caps ranging anywhere between $2, $7, $20 million. Advanced stage projects. These aren't early stage projects, but the market caps are treating these companies as if they were. And that's because this is going to be a pretty important financing round for these three companies. So we have three on the horizon and another two parallel that we're still doing due diligence on. So I say all that to say, be patient. Don't chase. I saw your letter earlier today, Nick. You recommended taking profits on a couple of positions. I'm waiting on some asset results from a couple of my core holdings. If they turn out the way I think they will, I will be selling some of my picks that have ran 500% and 1,000% because I do think I have several next potential 10 baggers. And, you know, in the case of this one specific company here in the U.S., I'm waiting for the assays to confirm that bias. So be diligent and look for value. Don't chase. And just please know that we're going to keep working hard to bring you some quality stories.
Yeah, I think that on the whole, the sector is still underowned. You're starting to get a bit more headlines in the Bloombergs and the CNBCs, but you're also still getting a ton of buying from central banks. You mentioned China. You didn't mention Tether, which announced this week it holds 140 tons of gold worth something like $23 billion and has been buying 32,000 ounces per week of gold.
Must be nice.
Pullbacks now are to be bought. So there's a couple of different things, right? There's the buy in the market strategy, which you and I do via letters like Underground Alpha, which you just mentioned, and Junior Resource Speculator and Junior Resource Monthly. And those are buying shares in the open market. We're now at the point where, and I've said this a bunch of times, you can buy the dip, and those dips are coming. One, because trees don't go to the sky, the metals have to consolidate their gains, but specifically in the equity shares, I've seen the dips because money is being raised, right? So I'll just give you an example off the top. You know, one of the companies we saw and visited with was Aldebaran Resources, and I recommended that company. I mean, we've taken profits on that. We've made a lot of money on that, the stock in the past. We financed it. Gosh, I think it's something like 30 or 45 cents.
Yeah,
and it went to $4. Something like that is pulled back. But I recommended it in November as part of that promotion with Mr. Rule. And the buy under price was $3.60. And everybody had a chance to get in at that price. And then shares ran to over $4. But I left the buy under price at $3.60. And what I was saying in the letter today is that those buy under prices are there for a reason. They're meant for you not to chase, for you to set limit orders so you can take advantage of pullbacks when they materialize. And the reason that they're materializing, at least as I see it in this bull market, is because of equity raises where the market needs to take a couple of days. And it's really only taken a couple of days to digest that dilution, right? So Aldebaran announced a raise. They upsized it to $35 million. I think it was done at $3.25 a share. Shares pulled back to $3.60, stayed there for a cup of coffee, and now they're back up over $3.60. Right? So if you had your limit order set, you were able to take advantage of that. And that's the service that I provide to you. I'm not a cheerleader. I'm not one to say, you know, go balls to the wall, chase all this stuff to the sky. We're going to $10,000 gold. Like, that's not what I do. That's not how I've made money. And that's not how I'm trying to help you make money. So those buy under prices are strategic. And you'll see fits and starts along the way. There will be pullbacks, and that's what those levels are identified for, to help you set limit orders and get in when those pullbacks materialize.
Yeah, no, look, we could get a 50% correction in the gold price and still be right around 4,000, a 40% correction and still be right around the $4,000 level, right? Which indicates to you the bullishness of the market and, again, the structural demand from the likes of Tether and central banks and, you know, anybody that's trying to rotate out of, you know, like the Ray Dalios of the world, like Warren Buffett warned before he retired and stepped down from Berkshire Hathaway. There's a rotation, bottom line, going outside of the dollar. Now, I will caution. The one incident that could completely change all that, and we're going to have to touch on Iran here, because I saw one of the most beautiful protests while I was in Vancouver. And when I say beautiful, I have to commend the people that were protesting and law enforcement. Respectful on both sides. There was a crowd. I think it had to be between 10 and 20,000 people, Nick. I mean, we were trying to walk through it, and look, people were doing what we should be allowed to do here in America without, you know, the things that we're seeing, right? Protesting, voicing their opinion, gathering passionately, but respectfully. I observed law enforcement, and it was such a contrast from what we're seeing in the headlines here in the U.S. So kudos to both sides there on that front. But the one incident that I think reverses the dollar's trajectory, at least in the interim, it's midterm to long term, it's toast, right? Is going to be, you know, a global conflict, such as us going into Iran, or us continuing this policy of regime change. I couldn't help but notice Mr. Marco Rubio talk about Cuba now and how, you know, he's not saying that we would go in there with boots on the ground, but a regime change there would be welcome. I have a buddy that's getting deployed, you know, to the Middle East as we speak. And so there's definitely movement in that direction. The language from the administration hints at that. Does that escalate and spill over? Look, if you look at your history, most of the world global conflicts, world wars, and the big wars started over something trivial, right? And spilled over into major, major global conflicts. That's the one outlier that could cause capital flight to the U.S. It is still the reserve currency. It's still the cleanest dirty shirt in the laundry basket. It's got that going for it. Outside of that, prepare for some inflationary pressures from the Fed, from, you know, the administration. They want lower rates, and they want lower rates because of the debt. The debt stands at almost 39 or 40 trillion. 40. Last time that I checked, it's 40 now. And we're adding a trillion. I don't know how often, but it's pretty significant. So, I think metals go higher. I would ask you for technical levels, but I mean, we saw a correction. It was up near 5,600 and then closed at, I think, 5,300 and bounced back and forth for a bit, closing near 5,400. Silver corrected all the way to 103 while we were in Vancouver. We were applauding that pullback, and it turned right around and ran to 120, settling nicely at 116. What are you seeing on the technical side with this crazy, crazy volatility?
Yeah, first, I forgot to give you the second half of my spiel earlier, so let me do that. If you're not buying in the open market, we're doing what you were talking about at the beginning of the podcast, buying private placements, either new deals or restructured deals. And that's what I gave my talk about at the Vancouver Resource Investment Conference, how we buy private placements, capital pool corporations. And in that way, we can be very selective and buy them early stage while they still have very low market caps. We don't need to wait for a pullback in the market. So, you know, whether you're doing it by buying shares the open market, we can help you with the products I mentioned earlier, or if you're able to do the private placements, we can do that. Technical levels are, you know, silver is almost doing it in a day. The top side is something like $120, and don't be scared if it pulls back to 100 or $99, would still be bullish. At this point, gold could go to $5,000 and still be bullish. So don't think that $500 swings in a day or two are crazy, because we just saw that. I mean, shit, Gerardo, it's Thursday. We just saw $5,000 on Monday, and it touched $5,600. And so this thing's moving by a couple of $100 in very short order. I saw somebody say that it's the fastest $500 move on record for gold. Well, no shit. If you're talking about absolute terms, it's never moved $500 like that before. I don't know what it's been in percentage terms if it's ever moved that fast, but it's been a bat out of hell. Copper, let me pull that up for you. I don't know how much you want to talk about, but let me get it.
No, I definitely want to talk about about copper, and then I want to talk about uranium. Before you pull those charts up, I got to say it warmed my contrarian heart when I saw Cramer Midday today tweet that gold and silver were overbought, and he sees a sell-off immediately as soon as he tweeted that. It turned around, and like gold surged like $100, and silver added another $4. It was poetry in motion in live form via X/Twitter. Oh.
The inverse Cramer portfolio. I think that beat Nancy Pelosi last year, if I'm not mistaken. I think I said that on a previous podcast.
Yeah.
But copper could go to 575, still be bullish. It has put in all-time highs in the past couple of days, well north of $6. I might as well just go down the list for a little bit. Tin was at all-time highs, I think something like $54,000 a ton. Aluminum is at all-time highs, it's at four-year highs, you know, $3,300 a ton. Platinum out to all-time highs, palladium breaking out to multi-year highs. So lots to like across the metal space. Lithium still above $23,000 a ton of lithium carbonate after being, you know, down around $8,000-$9,000 a ton last summer. So these metals are ripping. Even oil starting to catch a bit across the entire commodity complex, now up near the low to mid 60 dollars per barrel. And so last week during this podcast, I pulled up the CRB commodity index. You can see now how that wants to break out to the next leg higher. So a lot to like across the entire commodity space. Don't chase, be patient, buy on down days. That's where we're at now, but a lot to like across the entire complex. Weak dollar, as you said, maybe that's the chart I'll pull up if there's one I'd like to show, because it's one you and I have talked about for a while, and I've got a fun little graphic on it. So let me see if I can find that without delaying too much here. I don't know if you remember, Gerardo, but when we presented together, not this past year, but the previous year at the New Orleans Investment Conference, when Trump had just been elected and was getting into office, and we were saying, the Doge isn't going to bite. This isn't the man that's going to rein in the debt, et cetera. And I was showing this chart, at least the left-hand side of it back then.
It's well done, sir, by the way.
What the dollar does under a Trump administration. This is a gentleman who likes a weaker dollar, thinks it's good for trade and other policies, who, when asked just yesterday or 2 days ago what he thinks about the dollar, said it was beautiful. And if you can see there on the right, beautiful is a 96.2 on the DXY there at a four-year low. If you connect the dots all the way back here to February 2022, and gosh, I can't believe it's February already. And then while we're here, maybe I'll show you the CRB, because I did a nice little chart about that in the letter today, and it's worth maybe taking a look at if I can't delay too long here. Let's have a look. Look at that. So you got the last cycle there. I showed this last week, but I made it better this week. I made the triangle more congruent. I put your little half circle there on your little teacup on the right-hand side, which was your consolidation from here in 2022 to over here in 2026, where we're at now. And if you zoom all the way in, you can see what's happened here. This has broken out above the line. You see the little green ledge right there. This entire commodity complex wants to go higher. And so I was asking rhetorically, I guess, is the next leg starting? So there's some technical levels there for you. The metals are ripping, and we're looking at deals across multiple commodities, base metals, energy metals. We just did a uranium deal. And if you'll let me hog the mic for one more second, I'll do uranium for you, because I was on a uranium panel as well. And, you know, speaking of people stopping us on the floor and in the hall, you and I were on the same flight out of Vancouver to Seattle, and I was sitting there, and we landed, and we had to wait about, I don't know, 20 minutes on the tarmac to get to our gate once we got to Seattle. And this gentleman who's sitting across the aisle from me, he turns around and he looks at me, and he's like, "You're Nick Hodge." He was like, "I met you a couple of years ago at VREC. You still bullish on uranium?" And I was like, "Yeah, man, I'm still bullish on uranium. There's a lot to like in this space." And I had just sat on the uranium panel, so this is what I told them. Sorry, I got to read for a second. For the past something like a decade, the world's been using 185 to 200 100 million pounds of uranium, and they've only been replacing half that. So they're burning a pound of uranium, they're replacing it with a half pound of uranium. That obviously doesn't math out. So they've had to eat or erode through the global stockpiles that you may have heard about, that no one can say exactly where they are, but they clearly exist because uranium hasn't broken out yet. It would seem to me that those stockpiles are now being worked through, and these utilities are starting to contract higher. So the World Nuclear Association was out with research recently saying that on a per year basis, an annual basis, every single year from now until 2040, for the next 14 years, we're going to have an annual shortfall of 70 million pounds a year of uranium. If you add that all up, 70 million pounds times 14 years, it's over 1 billion pounds of uranium that the world needs to find. And if you know anything about mining, if you've been following us for any length of time, if you've heard me talk about my 10-year-old daughter and how long it took Perpetua to get its permit, which was every single year of her life until she turned 9, you can't just flick a switch and get these projects to come online. They take 5, 10, 15, 20 years to prove out. And so by the time that ends, that 70 million pounds per year until 2040, we're going to need, because we're building plants, we're extending the life of plants. By then, small modular reactors will be in the mix. We're going to need something like 400 to 530 million pounds a year of uranium, up from the current 200. The price has to go up. What's the Rick Rule saying? The price has to go up or the lights are going to go off, right? And you're seeing that in the Northeast, in parts of the South this week, as they continue to grapple with not just the snowstorm, but continued frigid temperatures. I think in Maryland, it's been single to low double digits, certainly below freezing for the past couple of days and projected for the next week. And you're seeing, you know, the grid operators and the utilities put out warnings saying we're sort of at peak demand here. Well, you're not making that up with solar panels and wind turbines and storage. You need baseload power. And the only way to get that is nuclear. So there's a reason that even the Democrats, Kathy Hochul in New York, have been on the microphone saying, "And look, we're going to extend the lives of reactors, and we're going to build new ones," because the amount of demand and strain on the grid necessitates that you add new production assets. I understand that it's natural gas as a bridge fuel in the interim. Believe me, I understand. But
that's
the long-term,
a good thing, by the way.
the long-term solution is nuclear if you want the clean, emissions-free power in a baseload capacity.
No, well said. I don't think uranium is getting enough attention. It went from 83, 84 to a two-year high of 101.50. The ask right now, I was just looking, is 103. And look, I actually think it was last week or the week before where we were explaining to you all that the move that you're seeing in the lithium equities, because they were so depressed after that year and a half consolidation, was going to play out exactly the same way in the uranium space. And you're seeing that now. I'll give you a freebie that's in the portfolio. COSA Resources, right, has a major joint venture with Denison, and they're up 33% on the week. It's Thursday. They're up 63% in the last month. And so that was a position that in the portfolio was down some 30% for me. And I just told her, I know we've been saying it, right? There's great value there, great team. Need a better market. The better market is here. And so now that's a position that's up some 50% for me or 55% for me. So it happens really quick, especially in the junior resource space, especially for the explorers, right? And so please, by all means, don't confuse being down 20, 30% on a position for not having a quality position. Sometimes you just need the right market. I am imploring you, if you don't yet have good uranium exposure, please get that done, because these moves are going to be quick to the upside the way they were quick to the downside. Uranium is, in a lot of ways, like when it comes to volatility, it's like lithium's little brother. It's not as volatile and violent to the upside and downside, and the cycles tend to last a little bit longer than in lithium, but it's very violent, and it is we're at the upside portion of that cycle. So whether you like explorers, developers, or producers, Get a good basket of those. Get a couple of those, because you're going to want that. It's going to be fun times in the uranium space. We talked about copper new highs, silver new highs, gold new highs. We're going to be talking about uranium new highs here in the next 6 months, I believe.
Yeah, I mentioned COSA during that uranium panel the other day and the joint venture they had with Denison. Yeah, I also did a deep dive with Curtis Moore from Energy Fuels for free for you on this podcast. I think that might have been in December. Yep. So that stock was up one day this week, something like 17%. We bought it last January in the $5 range, and it hit like 27 or 28 bucks this week, Gerardo. So had a little bit of a pullback, but there's a lot to like in the uranium space, and there's still a lot of value to be had as these explorers start exploring with big drill campaigns this year.
I expect a year full of discoveries. Companies aren't all going to hit right away. That's not the way exploration works, folks. For those of you that are newer to this space, put capital into the right teams with the right capital structure, with the right assets in safe jurisdictions. And I can't stress this enough. Jurisdictions matter. And, you know, being in one part of a country isn't the same as being in another part of that same country. It varies. I like to say that jurisdictional risk when it comes to mining and exploration is like real estate, right? It's very local. And so municipalities matter, cities and towns matter, states matter. And so you want to do your due diligence, but if you can check jurisdiction, share structure, and the people box off, the asset part takes care of itself. And sure, sometimes it takes an extra few months longer than we like, especially in this kind of market. But worth the patience, and there's some great deals. We'll get to that in the premium portion of the podcast here in just a bit. Anything on the market side, anything else that you want to share, Mr. Hodge?
It's like salsa, Gerardo. You want that pace from El Paso. You don't want that New York City salsa.
New York City! Let's get to what's going on. Look, I touched on the protests there in Vancouver. I don't know what your experience, I mean, we were walking together, so I imagine it was similar, but I would love your take on it. To me, it was one of the most beautiful demonstrations, and shout out to all my Iranian friends, and man, my heart just fucking hurts for everything that's going on around the world right now. Have not forgot about, you know, Palestine and Gaza and everything that's going on there. Have not forgot about any of the other things that are going on here in this country. And we'll talk about those here in just a second. But definitely, definitely atrocious what is going on in Iran, and wish nothing, nothing, nothing but the best. It's such a beautiful people and a beautiful culture. And look, some of the stories that we're hearing, I mean, I think you had a conversation with someone. I'll be respectful and not put the name out, but they still have family, close family, immediate family that are there. And I believe, well, I'll let you share the communication. I don't want to put words in your mouth or his mouth, but you had the conversation, right?
Yeah. So there's a Persian Iranian gentleman that I've been meeting with for a long time, have done business with. I like and respect. We always connect, at least for coffee, if not, you know, breakfast or dinner when I'm up there. And it was so busy this time, we only had time for a coffee, but we still sat for 20 minutes and had a nice chat. And he was saying that his wife's parents still live in Iran. And you know, there was the media and the internet blackout, right? So it was tough to get communications. Even the Wi-Fi and everything was down. So they had to communicate via landline. And he was saying it was so surreal, the conversations they were having, because they couldn't really say anything because everybody thinks that the landlines are tapped. So it's like, you know, it's like some, you know, bullshit conversation. Oh, how's the weather? You know, da, 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 da.
And he said, Mexico for the last 10 years, man.
when they finally got their Wi-Fi back, they were, you know, able to have a proper conversation. And they were saying that, look, the numbers of dead are, I don't know exactly what they are, but they seem to think that they were in the 20s of thousands, right? That there were dead bodies on the street outside of their apartment complex. And so I've seen numbers ranging from 2,000 to 40,000. It's tough what to know is true, but it's clearly true that there's many people dead, and that the Iranian government, the regime there, was content to mow down protesters and black out the media. And then almost right after that, I walked over to a business lunch that we were having.
Yeah.
And well, actually, this is not funny. While I was having that conversation, I saw people walking by the coffee shop with flags. And I was like, what are these people doing with the flags? And he was like, oh, there's a big protest today. They're probably starting to congregate for the protest. I didn't think any more of it. And then I started to walk to lunch. And as I got to lunch, which was right across from the Vancouver Convention Center, there's a restaurant literally right across a little square or piazza. piazza or whatever you want to call it. And, you know, a couple of hundred people had started to assemble. We had our lunch, took an hour and a half, however long it took. And then by the time we came out from that lunch, the entire square was completely full. I mean, wall to wall, from the restaurant to the convention center, shoulder to shoulder. They were pressed up against the restaurant, the doors, from the moment we left the restaurant, trying to get back over to the convention center. I mean, I thoroughly felt like I was in a movie. I'd never been in anything like that before, with everybody holding their flags or a picture of a loved one or a picture of someone else, chanting and singing. Essentially asking for regime change, lots of signs about how would you feel if it was your country. And like you said, they were doing it beautifully. There was no violence. It was very coordinated, lots of chanting and praying and singing, but certainly 10 to 20,000 people, like you say. And that went on for a couple of hours, I would say, because then we made it back to the convention center. Did a couple of other, whatever we did at that time, meetings or booth visits or whatever. Yeah. And then we had to go to the hockey game, and we called an Uber from the basement or the first floor of the convention center, came up out of the convention center, and the protesters were then marching around the street, right? And we realized there's no, absolutely no way we're going to have to, we're going to get an Uber through this, right? I mean, you could see on the map on Uber that the guy was just two blocks away or whatever and was unable to get there. So good on those people for voicing their opinion and making their calls known. Calls, C-A-U-S-E, not C-A-L-L-S, calls. And we'll see what happens with the world. I think that, you know, we've got aircraft carriers and we've mobilized some big aircraft. I'm not one to vote for regime change. I'm a sort of a libertarian guy. I'd like to stick to my own borders here, but can certainly understand the other perspective and why they would want the U.S. to go in there and do something with the regime, given what they just saw happen in Venezuela. They sort of want some of that for themselves. And then at the same time, back to the conversation with my friend in the coffee shop, it's very difficult to do that. I mean, that's a very difficult political decision, because you're going to open up a can of worms, like you said earlier, to a potential wider conflict. Because, you know, if the U.S. were to go into Iran, it's not like they can retaliate against us, right? We're too far away. They don't have that strike length or capacity. But you bet your bottom dollar that they're going to try to hit their nearby neighbors, our quote-unquote friends, the Saudis, if you want to consider them that. Or other allies that we have in the area, right? So it's an ugly can of worms for sure. Still feel, well, I don't really feel blessed, but happy or content that my home is where it is for all the problems that we have here, which I'm sure we're going to talk about in due course.
Yeah, let's get to the due course part. That was very beautifully said. And again, sending all the best energy to everyone out there, and the people that have friends and family and loved ones in that part of the world right now. Let's get to it. There was a young woman, a mother, that was dropping her kid off at school a few weeks back, and you know, there was a video of the shooting. We talked about that, you know, at length here. I expressed my opinion. We played devil's advocate and said, well, you know, for the more paranoid, for the side that wants to defend the officer's actions, which I don't see as defensible. I mean, the kill shot came from the side. The first shot hit the shoulder. He was clearly to the side. But yes, I mean, the vehicle did, you know, whether or not she was listening to one of the officers to get out of there or not, the vehicle was moving. It was in motion. And tragically, and I still think, you know, that's a second degree murder, or at the very least manslaughter. I'm no legal scholar, but I have eyes, right? But there was an argument to be made in that one. The argument was that the vehicle was moving, and in the heat of the moment, despite that officer having 18 years of experience as a law enforcement officer, things happened and it escalated, and it resulted in the unfortunate death of that young mother. Fast forward a week or two later, and Alex Preddy is murdered. And you initially hear the account. And within 30 minutes before the video comes out, you have Peter Hegseth and Ice Princess, whatever her name is, Christy Noem or whatever, and Stephen Miller all in a very coordinated fashion, tweeting or posting on X, a far left domestic terrorist, same language that they use on the young mother, right? From Minnesota, from Minneapolis. A domestic terrorist violently attempted to assassinate one of our agents, and it results in blah, 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 whatever language they use. But then the video comes out, and now they have a problem because people have fucking eyes. And listen, there's a new video that's circulating that shows from the week before that shows him getting into it with the ICE agents, yelling at them, come fucking assault me.
Kicking the car. Yep. We saw it.
Kicking the car. What you don't see is what preceded that, which is interesting to me. And we'll see how that plays out. Right. What we don't see is why he ends up with a broken rib from that incident, according to the medical reports. So I don't know what happened beforehand, but I'm going to assume, just using a little bit of logic, that there was probably an altercation. He probably got his ass beat. He was probably upset about that and ended up, you know, kicking the car and telling him, come on, assault me, motherfuckers. Let's assume I'm wrong and he's just an asshole, which by all accounts isn't the case, right? VA nurse, just, you know, everybody has nothing to say but the best things to say about him. But let's assume he was the worst of the worst. Let's assume he was out there looking for trouble. Let's assume he was wanting his get back for the broken rib, if that broken rib story is true. Assume whatever you want to assume. That video is an execution, y'all. It is a straight up execution. That is first degree murder. As clear as that gets. As clear as that gets. If you've seen the video and you don't believe that, if you believe that the officers were within their right to go 6-7 on one, have him on the floor, turn him around while he holds his phone. He could have pulled his gun, by the way. He chose not to. Get his ass beat and then get shot in the back of the head and in the back 10 times. If you can see that and hear that and still believe that law enforcement was within their rights here in America, there's nothing I'm going to be able to say to convince you anyway. And frankly, I'm not trying to. But that is tragic and that is murder and...
It's definitely murder. I'll walk back the first degree because that has to be premeditated. But the fact remains that, you know, the law enforcement, whether it's in Mayberry or in Minnesota, is not judge, jury, and executioner. We have rules for that. Certainly, this gentleman was disarmed. It's clear to see in the video. We now know that two ICE agents discharged their weapons. And at the end of the day, this just isn't how we do things in America. You can be all for immigration and deporting immigrants, etc. But that doesn't change the fact that we have rights. We have rights to keep and bear arms. By the way, to protect the free state, that's what that Second Amendment is about. And we have rights to be secure in our persons and not have to show our papers. That's what America is about. And to have the masks, people, the thuggish nature of the way they present themselves. This is something that I've been against for a long time. The way we police in America, right? The skull and bones and the blue line. It's like, it doesn't make sense to me. It reeks of a police state and a culture where you're pitting those who are sworn to protect and serve and those who we pay with our exorbitant tax dollars. It's putting them directly against the citizens that they're sworn to protect. And so, you know, again, like you said, you have a right to go and protest. You have a right to keep and bear arms. And in this case, the video clearly shows that the gentleman, I know everybody's seen it by now, but we haven't had a podcast since last week, shows that the video was taken off his right hip before the ICE agent opens fire. In that case, and there's been some law enforcement and some legal experts that have posted much more eloquently about this and have written it up with the pictures and things.
Sure.
It's an unjustified shooting, right? These cops are capable when it's 4-5-on-1 of subduing an individual without lethal force. What we've seen over the course, really, of this, the Minnesota episode, is a willingness and a wanting of these ICE agents to provoke.
Correct.
And to fire projectiles at folks who were filming them and wanting to intimidate. I'm sure you've seen the videos of them talking shit to people who are filming them, telling them, oh, you're going to be in a nice little database. Like, we got you now. Look, man, that is un-American. The right to protest, you know, all the way back to our founding fathers going against the Redcoats, you know, on through Martin Luther King, et cetera, is the backbone and the foundation of, you know, what this nation was built on. We are a nation of protesters. We are a nation of outsiders. We are a nation that doesn't like to have the boot of the government on our neck. And this is all that. This is the government boot on your neck. And the other thing, and I've railed against this for a while too, I've talked on this podcast about the Republicans usurping the Don't Tread on Me insignia, which is clearly libertarian. And they don't understand it because this is the treading. This is the treading that that insignia stands against. You are being tread on by the government thugs, by agents of the state, those who have a monopoly on power, which only the state possesses, and you're seeing how they're executing it here. To be pro that is to be anti-American, and as things get more and more partisan, it's just so dumb that you can think that, oh, you know, you have Trump saying, you know, you can't show up to a protest with a gun. You can't walk around with a gun. It's like, yeah, you can, man. Minnesota has open carry laws. We have Second Amendment rights.
This gentleman again, had a carry concealed permit. He actually went through the process that America lays out for people to legally be able to carry.
And so I just see the extreme partisans. I'll get both sides because I do take issue with the murder. Like, I don't think it's murder because you got to premeditate that shit. Do I think that
they call it second degree murder?
Do I think they want violence and they want to intimidate? Absolutely, Gerardo. And then to see the partisans, I don't even know some of their names, but Jack Prosobic or whatever it is, like those sort of camps, to say that this gentleman deserved execution or he deserved what was coming to him, like, nah, man, that's got your eye off the ball as well. And so, you know, you're seeing now, and you mentioned this while we were in Vancouver, this is likely a pretext for the midterm elections, right? Because you can see, you know, Trump's popularity going downhill. You can see how there could be a potential for a Democrat wave in the midterm elections. You've already seen a socialist mayor get elected in New York City. And now what are you seeing? The so-called master, the artist of the deal, saying that he'll pull back. And he's already let go the head guy there that was walking around in the Nazi style coat.
Yeah, fuck that guy.
If you'll just give us all the voter rolls, right? And so I don't know the ultimate reason that he had people in there, but I think that, gosh, we're in such a partisan place and I don't like the way the state is doing things. And I agree with some of the rationality that the Republicans put forward. You know, sometimes I do think you should have a license have to show a license to vote. I mean, you got to show a license to do many other things.
Yeah, but I agree with it too. You should have to be a citizen. I'm with all that.
This isn't the way to go about it. And I don't like I'm starting to ramble, but I don't like the thuggish nature. I don't like the masks. This is not how we should be doing policing in America. And I think it's par for the course for this fourth turning, and hopefully we can rise above it. And I'll say what I always say. We've seen this coming for a long, long time. These are the ugly, ugly consequences of continued partisanship. And again, hopefully we can make it through.
Yeah. Tom Homan was brought in to instill some order in the agents. And it was telling to me that, you know, there's a report that the new orders are to not incite agitators and to only focus on immigration enforcement and those with criminal records. If those are the new orders, what were the old ones?
Correct.
And we'll just leave that there, folks. That's where it is. Yeah, it's again, hold your people close, be safe out there, everyone. And I said it last week, it's like they're going through the Constitution one amendment at a time and seeing how far they could stretch, inciting, ripping it apart from American hands. And it ain't gonna fly, folks. I'm telling you.
And just to tie it all together, there's only a thin, thin shred separating Khamenei mowing down protests and protesters in Iran, and ICE now killing, I don't even know how many we're up to, 6-7 people in the United States. I mean,
plus the ones in detention centers, sometimes illegally, that are sitting there just, yeah.
Thin line separates that philosophically, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, listen, I think it's a good time to get to the premium portion of the podcast, unless you have anything else you want to get off your chest, Mr. Hodge.
No,
it's been a busy week.
it's been a busy week. I'm still tired. I've been getting a good night's sleep, but there's no lack of things to do. Like you said, you read the issue that I put out today. We're selling things. We're buying things. We're adjusting buy under prices. So you ready to go, or you want me to go?
No, let's get to it. Let's get to it. I am Gerardo Del Real, along with Mr. Nick Hodge. This was the 351st episode of our weekly therapy session that we call Investing in Bizarro World. Have a great week, everyone. Looking forward to seeing you all next week. To all the new subscribers and the people that have followed us out for quite some time, really, really appreciate all the feedback, all of you writing in. It was great seeing some of you in Vancouver. Looking forward to a fun and profitable and volatile 2026. Take care out there, everyone.
See ya.